This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs, where we strive our very best to bring you the best in entrepreneurial education and training and experience from some of the best, and I do mean the best, in entrepreneurial endeavors, from educational executives, entrepreneurs, CEOs, strategists. You name it, we try to bring you the best, and today is no exception. With more than 30 years of experience earning serious results for some of America's best-known corporations, and that includes Ameritech, Convergys, AT&T, IBM, Pitney Bowes, and SuperValue, this gentleman, Mr. Keith Weiss, has risen to become a successful CEO and one of the highest-ranking African-American executives in the U.S. Now, Keith understands the rules for success in corporate America, but now Keith shares those same rules as an entrepreneur, as a consultant, as an author, as a speaker, and a thought leader. Now, his acknowledgments and awards, if I tried to go through all of those, we would not have time for this interview. So I will post those and make sure that you can take a look at Keith's stellar career and all the things that he's done in corporate America and that he's doing now over on the site when this interview is ready to go. But what I want to do right now is welcome to this interview Mr. Keith Weiss, and then we'll get into his story and the things that he wants to share with you today. So welcome to the call today, Keith.
Thank you so much, Brother Bedford, for having me. Really, really glad to be a part of it.
Man, I really appreciate it. Now, again, your bio, your career, it's stellar, and again, it is so long, and I will post that for everyone, but I really want to hear in your words, and you tell our listeners, who is Keith Weiss?
Well, thank you, and first of all, the first thing I would tell you and your listeners is that anything that I've done, anything I've accomplished, anything worthwhile in my life is not because I'm so bright or so brilliant or went to the best schools, but really by the grace and mercy of God, so I first have to start there. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, a child of the 60s, so I came of age during the civil rights movement. And education was very important in my family. I learned very quickly that I wasn't good enough at sports or entertaining, and my parents instilled in me an expectation of excellence as it pertained to education. And so that was important because it really set the framework and the foundation for my career to say, hey, be a continuous learner, always have intellectual curiosity. And so that's really kind of what it was, something that was instilled in me in youth. Couldn't afford to go to the big schools, and so I graduated undergrad from Cleveland State and later got my MBA from a small school called Baldwin Wallace and really set out on a corporate career and have really enjoyed that journey for 30-plus years. I won't bore you with all the companies, but you mentioned a few of them. But one of the things that really stands out in my career is that many of the opportunities that I got were really disguised as problems. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I was giving in sales territories no one else wanted. I was asked to go to places no one wanted to relocate to. And while they may have seemed to be hindrances to others, they really were stepping stones to me. And so that's really how I've looked at my life and my career, that, you know, even problems really are opportunities in disguise.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. Now you mentioned not going to some of the bigger schools and now being able to get into corporate America and establish yourself the way that you did by addressing or really filling those voids or answering those problems. What were some of the challenges that you faced in going from your educational background and then getting into some of these? I mean, we're talking about Fortune 500 companies that you've worked for. So how did you, what were the challenges to get to that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I found was over time, people were less concerned about where you went to school and more concerned about what did you do when you got in the game? What did you do when you really got into an organization? What was the value add that you brought? And so what happened was I began to develop a reputation as someone who can take underperforming businesses, broken businesses, and turn them around. And again, it goes back to the fact that typically when I got a promotion or when I got a job, it was because it was something no one else wanted. And so, you know, really I created a brand of doing that by accident. And what happened over time is, again, you know, people began to notice, companies began to recognize this gentleman, you know, can really take things and turn them around. And so as such, you know, I started with the Bell System in the early 1980, later getting a master's degree and going to IBM, when IBM was trying to change from a hardware software company to a services company. I did that for a number of years. That was recognized. I was brought back into the Bell System to head up in 1993 this thing called cellular and paging, which really was just starting to get into the mainstream. Did that for a number of years. Ultimately was brought into a company to build call centers all over the world, India, Canada, what have you. You know, that led to being brought into Pitney Bowes to say, hey, help us turn around our mailing business. I had no mail experience whatsoever. And then the coup de grace, so to speak, was being brought in to be president of a multi-billion-dollar grocery industry with no grocery retail. And so, again, it was based on the brand and saying, hey, here's a person who can, you know, understand, you know, fundamentally what's wrong with the business and turn it around.
Right. And it's interesting that you said that, that was the recognition that people saw that you were able to do that. But did you set out to become a turnaround expert? Was that the way that you, for the lack of a better term, niched yourself to say, I'm going to go into these arenas to be a turnaround expert? Or was that just something that happened by happenstance?
Brother Bedford, I set out to never be poor again. I set out to be able to put a roof over my head. I set out to make money. And truly, it's kind of by accident that I stumbled into, and actually was brought to my attention by outside folks who mentored and sponsored me, that, hey, you have a knack for this. And so it was purely accidental in one sense, but divinely ordained in another.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, you said that other people, your mentors mentioned that. Now, how important was it for you to begin to look out and select mentors in this entire process?
You know, that was huge, because I graduated college. I just turned 21 and was very young, you know, full of myself, thought I knew everything, and walked into a world where, one, there were not a lot of people who looked like me and you, and two, the ones that were there really weren't trying to help. If you overlay that with the fact that the majority leaders weren't trying to help, I really said, hey, I have got to figure this thing out, and I don't have all the answers. But what I found is that when you open yourself up for feedback, when you open yourself up to be a continuous learner, and people can see that you have a drive and a hunger, there are people who will reach out and help you. There are people who will reach out and mentor you. They may not look like you. They may not come from the same background, but there are people who are there. And so, you know, I would latch on to those folks who, you know, their strengths matched my weaknesses, so to speak.
Now, when I study your story, you know, it, and those who are probably listening, I mean, it could seem like you just went into school, you went to obviously several companies, and again, we didn't name all of them. You worked for a lot of companies, and it could just seem like this steady climb towards the top, to where you eventually became president and CEO. But what would you say, did you have any serious or dramatic drops or pullbacks as you were ascending to these levels in corporate? What would you say would be your biggest challenge that you had to face even in that ascension?
Yeah, that's a great question. And let's be clear, life is full of hills and valleys, and so is my career. I will tell you that, you know, I've made, you know, as many mistakes or more than anyone else. And while I appreciate my successes, it's my failures that's taught me. Probably one of the biggest things I had to really do was, one, get out of my own way. And what I mean by that is, one, you know, not let the negativity, not let the perceived racism or the prejudice, and the real prejudice that was out there, be a stumbling block. So saying, you know what, Keith, I am not going to let what others think of me hinder what I can do. I will not let someone tell me what I can or can't become. I'll never forget when I went to get my MBA. It was a company-sponsored MBA program, and my boss said, well, you don't need that. And I said, well, you know what? I do. And it's going to be extra work and all that. So I never let that people do that. The other thing about getting out of my way was that I was focused almost exclusively on me, myself, and I and my success. I didn't care who I walked over. I didn't care how much glass I broke, as long as I was successful. And that hit me very hard in my early 30s. I was at IBM at the time, to the point where that's one of the reasons I left the company was because while I was very successful on the results end, I was not very successful relative to people management and those types of things. And it really took an older gentleman, I'll never forget his name, was Neely Harrison, to sit me down and say, hey, Keith, you know, you may be successful this way, but you'll never be successful no matter where you go if you don't deal with these other areas of your personality. And that basically boiled down to, you know, not only thinking about myself and being a team player and looking for the bigger good as opposed to just my own good.
Now, how did you, for one, to have someone to sit you down and say that, but how did you receive that and how did you overcome? What were the tools or the resources that you used to become more of a team player and to develop your personality to really be a leader in corporate America?
You know, it's funny. I have always had what I call a board of directors and mentors, people who are in my circle, and I give them, you know, carte blanche to check me, so to say, you know, and give me insight. And so he was one of those folks. And so, you know, I took, you know, what he said to heart. Now, again, it was a hard message to take, and so I had to look in the mirror. And I had to look at my background and be honest with myself and say, Keith, you know, there's some truth to that. And once I accepted that reality, and once I said, hey, you know, I can never get to where I want to go if that's my focus, I began to look, think, act, and behave differently. You know, and so, you know, while I can't tell you any specific, you know, course I took to do that, what have you, I will tell you that I embrace the whole concept that it's all about people and relationships and that you get things done through, with, and around people. And so begin working on my interpersonal skills, begin to working on really, you know, how to build teams. And those are the things that really help me excel as a leader because what happens as a leader is that, you know, you tend to sometimes lose those technical skills. So I can't program, you know, computers like I used to, but
right.
I developed those more leadership type skills and understood that really true leadership isn't about being the boss. It's about taking the resources of the organization, helping people get to be, you know, get to where they want to be, and at the same time, you'll arrive there with them.
Wow. Now, obviously, you've had this story career in corporate America, but now you've branched out, and I would say that you put on the entrepreneurial hat, writing books, doing more consultations and speaking and things like that. What would you say is that you've recognized that is the biggest difference between working within corporate America and rising through the corporate American ranks the way that you've done, and then now being an entrepreneur, running your own enterprises where you're the catalyst and you're the product?
Well, the first thing you notice is that there's no corporate jet for you to get on, and that's you have to now
that's
get in line.
Big difference. Big.
You know, that coach ticket doesn't look too bad when it's coming out of your pocket. The second thing you realize is the resources. You know, you don't have that big machine behind you, so you become a lot more strategic and a lot more practical, a lot more pragmatic in how you go to business. But also you do have that sense of pride and sense of ownership that, you know, this is me, this is my brand, and I am the product, be it my book, be it a consultation agreement. And so that was, again, the fulfilling part about this. But make no mistake about it, you know, to have to now drive to the airport as opposed to having car service to take you to your private jet is a whole different experience. And I now have a greater appreciation for what it's like to get peanuts only in coach.
Wow. Now, you mentioned leadership. Would you say that is the trait or characteristic that you've had to have to transcend between those two worlds as a corporate executive and then as an entrepreneur? And the second part of that, what would you say is probably the most important quality or trait that we as entrepreneurs should embrace if we're to be successful as entrepreneurs?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting that you would say that because I talk about a lot of those principles that are really the same in a book I wrote a year or so ago called Corner Office Rules, The 10 Realities of Executive Life. And in that book, you know, I share, you know, some of the learnings that really work whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you work in the corporate arena. And the first chapter basically is one that says, hey, you don't know everything. And so what that says to me is make sure that you surround yourself and have a team of folks who are the best and brightest in what, you know, they bring to the table, because you can't do it all. And too often when you're the entrepreneur, when you're the boss, you tend to think that you have to do it all. But true leadership is knowing, you know, how to set strategy, how to provide the resources, how to have the right people, and then get out of the way. You know, one of the things that kept me awake at night in corporate America and keeps me awake now is, do I have the right people in the right roles doing the right things? And so that's important. You know, one of the other things is, you know, understanding that, you know, what made you successful then won't now. You know, I know a lot of entrepreneurs who, you know, maybe they had the technical skill to be an electrician, and they wanted to open up an electrical, you know, entrepreneur. Well, you're a great electrician, but maybe you need to bring in other people to help with the sales end of it. Maybe you need to bring in an accountant to help manage the books. And so those are some of the things that, again, transcend whether you're an entrepreneur or an entrepreneur, which is to me, you know, someone who leads from within a corporation.
That's great. No, great. Now, even in your second book, Good Is Not Enough, and Other Unwritten Rules for Minority Professionals, you use this term rules. And I've been blessed, obviously, to meet you and work with you at the Power Networking Conference, I would say, at least 4 or 5 years in a row. Rules. You're very disciplined. Even at the conference, I've seen you working out. So how important is it for us to understand rules and laws that we should embrace in order to achieve success?
Yeah, you know, and I'm big on sports analogies. And one of my analogies is, whatever game you're going to play, you've got to know the rules. You know, if you're going to be a successful football player, you have to understand the X's and O's and what it takes there. And it's no different in corporate America. Corporate America, as well as the business world, to some degree, is a game. And if you're going to play the game, you have to know these rules. And, you know, one of the number one things I think any athlete, be it a corporate athlete or otherwise, respects and understands is discipline. You know, you have to be disciplined. You have to, you know, remain focused. And so that is so, so key. You know, and so when I talk about, you know, be it an organization or a corporation, as a leader, there's three things you have to manage. Number one is your performance. You've got to be someone or an organization that delivers on their commitments. You know, one of the things when I was in corporate America, I would really push to some of the, you know, minority-owned business owners who would come to do business with me is, you know, my expectation level for the quality of service you deliver is not going to be less than the multi-million-dollar company you're going up against. You know, you've got to deliver on the results. Your performance is non-negotiable. The second thing, though, is your exposure. You know, how are you staying current to remain relevant? You know, either as an entrepreneur or, again, as a business leader, you've got to stay up to date with the economy. You've got to stay up to date with issues, technology. And too often we don't do a good job of that. I'll share this one quick story because it kind of highlights the point. When I was being interviewed to be this president of this multi-billion-dollar grocery chain, I met with the chairman of the board as part of the final interview process. The man asked me two questions, Brother Bedford. He said, Keith, where do you get your information from on a daily basis? And I was able to talk about reading the Wall Street Journal online, you know, before 9 o'clock, reading an industry publication, and, oh, by the way, just to stay current, reading USA Today. He says, great. He said, now, what was the last business book that you read? And I said, funny you should mention it. I read this book called Blue Ocean Strategy, you know, and we talked about it. He says, great. He says, I need to make sure that you're a continuous learner. I can teach you the grocery business. I can teach you any business. But if you don't have a passion for learning, and if you're not intellectually curious, I can't use you. And so that's the same with us. We've got to stay that way. And then last but not least is that whole thing called perception. How do you show up? What is your brand? And we get brand when I talk about automobiles. So if I say the ultimate driving machine, most people will say BMW. If I say what this car is known for safety, they'll say Volvo. But if I say the word Yugo, what comes to mind? You know, that old car that, you know, sometimes you go, sometimes you don't. And so I would ask, you know, either a business leader or an entrepreneur in your industry, in your community, are you viewed as a Yugo or are you a Mercedes or BMW? Because it's important.
Wow. Now, here's a great question. I think because you just struck a nerve, because I get that question a lot about branding, and you mentioned branding. For the small entrepreneur who's thinking of becoming the Mercedes or who knows that they need to become the Mercedes instead of the Yugo, what are the steps that they should work on in terms of their personal branding? Because the thing that I get is when I don't have all of the resources to brand like McDonald's or any of the other big brands that we recognize, as you just mentioned, what would be the steps for the beginning entrepreneur, the budding entrepreneur, to begin to brand themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as someone who had to go through that process from scratch, you know, the first thing I would say is, how do you show up electronically? And what I mean by that is, what's your website presence look like? You know, we live in a world of Google searches and what have you. And so it's important that you have an appearance in that space that looks professional. And the beauty of it is that now, you know, I won't say website designers are all created equal, but again, there are places that you can go to, people you can go to create a relatively inexpensive website presence. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, you know, I'm a big fan of a company. It's called Vistaprint. And again, for fairly low bucks, there are branding types of things that you can do there. Everything from keychains and coffee mugs, you know, to other things that, again, are a really low budget. But here's one that's a freebie. You can create thought leadership in the marketplace by blogging. And it doesn't cost you anything. I mean, it's literally taking your thought leadership about your business, your industry, and putting it out there for, you know, the world to see. I will tell you that, you know, just yesterday I got a very significant contract because someone read a blog I wrote about change management and how to be resilient during change. And again, it's putting that thought leadership. So those are some things that, you know, that you can do. It's, you know, I'll never forget my good buddy George Frazier says, you know, when you go into business, you can either be a businessman or woman or a businessman or businesswoman. You know, and so, you know, everything about you gives off a signal from your business card to everything. And so those are things that are you know, from a perception standpoint, set to stay. Do you look the part? Do you have, you know, what I call that executive presence? And those things don't cost millions and millions of dollars.
That's great insight. I'm sure the listeners will love that. We'll go back and make sure we take notes on that. Now, and I know we're getting ready to wind down, but I really want to ask you this because in my research of looking at many of the interviews and things that you've done and the way that you have become known as the turnaround expert, two words kept popping up in a lot of the interviews that I've seen you do, whether you were talking about your own companies or if you were being asked about General Motors or Starbucks or any of these other companies, two words kept coming up: culture and environment. And I really want you to try to explain to us the importance as entrepreneurs to develop the right type of culture and environment for us to grow our business, and then, as you mentioned, to be able to employ people and keep employees in these type of in our businesses.
Yeah, you know, it's really in fact, I applaud you for picking up on that because that's true. But culture, and I'll start there, is really what determines, you know, your success relative to how far you go in the business. And I'll give you a real quick example of what I mean by culture. There are organizations who will focus and strive on quality in what they do. It's more important for these people to put out a quality product as opposed to just putting something out fast, because that's – and so they create a culture and environment that says, hey, we want to make sure our products are quality. There are other cultures who say, hey, we want to make sure we're a customer-facing organization. Maybe we're a restaurant. Maybe we're a grocery store. We want our people to be friendly, helpful people. I just heard yesterday about an organization who, if during the interview process the candidate doesn't smile at least three times, they don't hire them. Because their thing is, we want to hire the smile, because we want that person who's in front of our customers to be friendly. And so it's important to create those kind of cultures. Conversely, there's certain cultures you want to avoid. You want to avoid creating a culture where people don't feel free to give their input and their ideas, because that stifles innovation and creativity. You don't want to create a culture where there's distrust or lack of transparency with communication, because again, people won't follow you. And so it's really important that you create these types of cultures. And so when I talk about Starbucks, they were creating a culture that said, we embrace and support your education and your growth, and we're willing to help fund some of that. Conversely, there are other organizations who have a culture of, it's all about us and what have you. So it's really important that you do that. And then when you hire, that you make sure you bring people in who match the culture that you're trying to set.
Wow. Man, that is great. Now, Keith, I mean, I could probably ask you a million questions. I could stay on the phone with you all day. But how can our listeners, obviously you have the books, how can they get in contact with you to get the books? What is the best way for them to reach out or begin to follow your thought leadership and the things that you share as it relates to entrepreneurship and business?
Great. That's a great question. I appreciate the opportunity. The first thing I would say is go check out my website, which is www.keithweiche, that's KEITHWYCHE.com. And there you can find videos and blogging information, what have you. I would encourage you to follow me on Twitter, at Keith Weiche. Every day we tweet out information and based on everything from what's going on in the business world to talent management to diversity inclusion, those types of things. And for my books, I could tell you, I love Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com because that's the best place to find them. But that's really, again, the places I would ask your listeners to go and check me out.
Oh, man, that's great. Now, what's next? As we get ready to close out, I want to know what's next for Keith Weiche.
Well, it's funny. There's a couple things that's next. I'm just wrapping up my third book that I'm excited about because I wrote this with my oldest daughter. It's really a follow-up to Good Is Not Enough, and it's focused on millennials and how to help that new generation we call millennials really get adapted. If they kind of grew up with a little sense of entitlement and some other things. And so we take a father-daughter spin and looking at those issues, excited about that. And right now I'm actually weighing, the fact of, maybe I want to go back to corporate America. There's some organizations that have reached out and said, we love contracting with you as a consultant, but, maybe you might want to come and help us really grow this thing. So, who knows what God has in store other than the fact that, I want to spend the rest of my days just really adding value and living in my purpose.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you adding value and sharing your knowledge, your expertise, and your experience with us here today. Any closing statements that you would have for the budding and the seasoned entrepreneurs? Because we have a mix of both, those who've been doing this for a while and who are looking for that next principle of slight edge, and then those who are just beginning and saying, man, what can I do to really pick up momentum? Any closing thoughts for those two groups?
Yeah, the first thing I would tell any of them is look for people who are already successful doing what it is that you want to do. I will tell you, when I said I wanted to step into this consulting, media relation, talking head space on television, that I went to people who were successful in that space, and I got advice from them. And so look for people who are successful in doing what you want to do and learn from them. Secondly, beware of the naysayers. I have to tell you that the world is full of naysayers. Not that you don't listen to sound advice and wisdom, but at the end of the day, you know the dream that God's placed in your heart. You know what your passion is, and don't let anyone talk you out of it. Every entrepreneur, I can tell you, probably going back to Einstein, will tell you there's someone who tried to talk them out of what it is that they want to do. And then thirdly, it's just, believe in yourself, but believe positively that what this thing is you're trying to do will come to pass.
Wow, man. Well, Keith, man, I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, again, your experience. Man, over 30 years of experience inside corporate America and then what you're doing outside of corporate America, I mean, it's very rich, and so I know that our listeners will thoroughly enjoy this. So, again, everyone, go to Keith's website. That's keithweiche.com. Of course, it'll be posted. Pick up both books, and we're definitely going to be looking forward to the third book that's coming out with you and your daughter. So, Keith, once again, I could never thank you enough for sharing your time with us this morning.
It's my honor and my privilege to share with you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Keith. And I look forward to seeing you this year at the conference.
See you in Dallas.
All right. Take care, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with Black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant Black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.